Welcome to the What's Your Weird Story podcast.
Everyone has at least one good story.
And some of us have stories that are just to the left of normal.
We're interested in the ones that push the boundaries of what we can perceive.
Stories that defy explanations.
Stories with an air of mystery.
Stories we might not share.
For fear of being thought of differently.
But don't worry. We're all friends here. So, what's your weird story?
Hello, Weirdsville. Welcome to the What's Your Weird Story podcast, where we like to talk to our listeners and we hear all of your weird, strange, funny, all the above. We get into some interesting talks. Today is no exception. We have a great one coming for you today. I am one of your hosts, Barry Johnston. With me, as always, the professor, Mr. Adam Beebe. How are you, sir?
I am well. Thank you very much, oh smiling sensei, my dear friend.
For those of you that are just tuning in for the first time, we kind of take the intro time to kind of just get to experience each other, what we've been up to lately, kind of catch up for the week. Have you done anything interesting or fun since we last talked?
Let me see. I am probably going to say no, not really.
I haven't either.
I've worked, and then I'd had a snow day. So I took off because of the snow was bad, but I didn't do anything in particularly fun or special. I just kind of was lazy and took a long nap, you know, so it was nice, but,
that was my weekend, which was nice.
Yeah. Yeah. No adventures, nothing really recently.
Well, we got, there's more snow coming. I saw in the forecast that there's a lot of snow coming, north of us. I think Oklahoma's supposed to get hit. Missouri, Tilly, buckle down, babe. I hear there's like a foot of snow coming.
My goodness.
So yeah, for them, that's a lot. And, it's that time of year. So yeah, not a whole lot going on around here. We just, kind of took it easy this weekend, which was nice. We've been on the go quite a bit. So that was good. Been watching some TV. We got into this new, it's a Survivor show, where they dump off people on, it's in Alaska, and they dump them off in remote locations. It's three people to a team. Mm-hmm. They take one person, they drop them off, and then the other two people have to watch them on cameras, and then they have to compete in order to get them supplies. So they compete with all the other contestants, members of their families and friends, to get supplies that they need. It's pretty interesting. It's pretty fun. None of these people are survival people. They're just normal people. So like spending a night in the middle of nowhere is a big thing, you know? So it's a lot of fun, and I can't remember the name of it, but it's a good show. If you guys get a chance, Google it, you know?
I watched something recently, and oddly enough, in along the same veins, but it was Celebrity Bear Hunt. So it was Bear Grylls.
Oh, okay.
And
yeah.
He had these they were English, you know, British celebrities from British TV and film, and so I knew some of them. I didn't know some, but I watched it on Netflix, and it was fun. They had to go through, they had to do challenges, and then if you failed the challenge, you had to go into the bear pit, which was this large area of, like, I think they're down in, like, Costa Rica or something like that.
Okay.
But there's this large area where they have to, it's got mixed terrain, and they have to go, and they have to find an escape pad, a place where they can escape, but they also have to find tools to help them get to the like unlock the door or cut wires or dig underneath a wall. And it was fun. I really enjoyed it because one of my favorites from comedic actors from the Inbetweeners, if you've never seen, great teenagers comedy show. So funny. But Joe Thomas was in it, and he was on this celebrity bear hunt, and he's a funny guy. He learns about himself. He gets kind of this self-discovery, you know, while he's doing this, that he can kind of be a leader.
Yeah.
And which is really cool because he's not somebody who you would thought, because he's full of like, for himself, he's full of, he's always like questioning himself and kind of full of doubt. But then when he gets placed in a situation of an authority needed, he was able to step up and like, you know, control a group of like three or four. So it was really cool.
Nice. I think I've seen the ads for that. I need to check it out. I like those kind of shows.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun because these, again, not only are these not survival people, these aren't even normal people. They're actors.
Yeah.
The television personalities.
Right. You know? Yeah. Definitely not survivalists. So, no.
Yeah. But it's worth checking out. So
cool. We have a harrowing story today to talk about. We have our friend Bonnie that came to visit us, and she tells a really wild, scary story that I think you and I could really relate to, growing up sort of in the middle of nowhere and having weird things happened.
Yeah, this is definitely back to our creepy type of shows. I mean, this whole event that happened to her, I can understand why she remembers it so vividly for so long. It's really cool. And she's got we discussed her job, or one of her jobs, that is it's kind of unusual. It's certainly not normal, but it is something that I, you know, is probably going to grow in the future. It's interesting to hear about. So without further ado, joining us from in Texas, is Bonnie. Bonnie, thank you so much for joining us. What's your weird story?
Yeah, thank y'all for having me. So my weird story happened, I'm 34, so it happened when I was, I think, 6, maybe 7. So it's been a while, but I remember it as if it was like yesterday. It's one of those like core memories that you're never going to forget. So we lived, when I was really young, like I said, 6 or 7, we lived out in the middle of nowhere in the country, like rural Texas town. And I remember my mom had signed me up for dance lessons at this little community hall. It was probably like 3 miles down the road from us, but you could get there two ways. You could get there down the highway, or you could take the back roads to that little community center. And so my sister, who is 10 years older than me, so she had to be about 16 or 17 at the time, just got her driver's license. And I remember her old red Ford Bronco, like the original Broncos.
Oh, yeah.
1996, 1997. And so she was like, oh, I'll take Bonnie to dancing. So she took me to dancing. And that night was very, it had started raining. It was kind of cold. It was like just like really like horror movie type weather, very intense outside. And so instead of going down the highway, which was the quicker way, and since my sister was a new driver, she was like, well, I'll take you the back roads. We'll just go the back way. So we went the back way, and she dropped me off at dancing. And I remember that class because it was inside this big, like, community center thing. So it really wasn't a real dance studio, but it was just set up for little girls' dance ballet classes. So she picked me up from there, and we were going back down those country roads, I guess. We were going back down the back way that we went, and it was dark outside and it was rainy and it was all the things. And I remember we turned down the road to get back to our house that our house was on. And there was a song playing on the radio, and for the longest time when I was younger, that song really creeped me out, but now I don't remember what that song was. Oh, like,
okay.
If I heard it, I feel like it would really, like, unlock some memories, but either way, there was a song playing, and I remember her driving very slow, lights, you know, and it's dark and it's rainy, and there's a guy walking down this country road where, I mean, and we're talking, like, you didn't have next door neighbors. Like, your next door neighbor was like way far away. So it wasn't like a community. There's not sidewalks. It was none of that. So it was a dark, rainy day. And this man is walking down the side. So on the passenger side, he's walking straight in the ditch on this rainy night. And I could see him, like, her headlights, you could see him. And he was like walking on the side. He did not have a facial features.
Whoa.
And he had a trench coat on. It was like a trench coat with like the collar flipped up, and he's just walking. And I'm like, okay, that was weird. And we pass him by.
Missed out the chills. Would you say he had no face?
Yeah, like I said, this is like plain as day. And he walked by, and I can see him, and I was like, what is going on? Because we were kind of like a community that we would, you know everybody. Like, you know everybody on that road, and there's really only like five people on that road, five families total on that road. And I was like, that is the weirdest thing ever. Like, very scary, very creepy. So we get home, and of course we tell my parents, like, my dad was there and my mom and my other siblings, and we were like, there's a man walking down the road that he didn't have a face. He was walking, like, kind of leaning down, like, kind of hunched over, couldn't see any facial features or anything, but he was walking, no lights or anything on him, like, and it's cold, all this stuff. And my dad was like, well, that's not normal, let me go see. So my dad gets in his truck and, like, drives around. He'd completely disappeared. Like, there's nowhere for this man to have walked to go into a house, because where we saw him, he was like between one neighbor to the next neighbor was a really long distance.
Yeah.
So if he was walking, my dad would have run into him like we just did 5 minutes prior, right? Yeah. And for him to walk anywhere else, he would have been in farmland. Like, he would have been walking in fields and farmland. And so my dad could not locate him. Like, he had like disappeared.
Yeah. So, you wouldn't normally do, you know, you don't want, I mean, at night, you don't walk, if you grow up in the country, you don't walk on through people's farms. Just don't do that. And at night, especially if it was raining heavily, you wouldn't go to the field, because that would be the worst place to go, because you can easily get lost, because there's nothing that on the horizon, nothing you can, it all looks the same for good distances. But also, it's, you know, depending on the time of year where the crops are, it could be much harder.
Exactly. So yeah, he completely disappeared. And so we also at that time had dogs. And so anytime anybody would, you know, for sure somebody walking by would have alerted the dogs, or, you know, anybody driving up into the driveway that they don't know, they would have barked and all of that stuff. Well, my dad comes back. He's like, I can't find him. There's nobody out there. I don't see anything. I don't know what y'all saw, but I saw it plain as day. My sister saw it plain as day. And so then later on, as you know, we go through the evening-ish stuff, I guess, we had on one side of the house where the front living room was, one side of the house had a sliding glass door, and the other side had just the right, like a regular door, but you could go in and out either one. And so later on, I don't know how much longer, like I don't remember details, but that same night there was a knock at that sliding glass door, and the dogs went crazy. And we were like, what's going on? Like, you know, this is like a little kid. I'm like 7 years old. I'm like, oh my God, Dad, like what's happening? He goes outside. There's absolutely nothing there. There's no man. There's nothing. Like, there, and this is, again, this is rural Texas. Yeah. I mean, our closest neighbor is way far away. And so, yeah, there was a knock at the door. It's still raining and all of that. Dogs are going crazy. And there was nobody there. Whoa. There was no one at that house. There was no one around. My dad couldn't find anybody. Like,
who else heard it? The knock? Was there anybody else? We all did. You all heard it.
I don't know if my parents did, but I know, like, us siblings were, like, on alert. Like, what in the world is going on? And, you know, my mom being like, okay, y'all stay inside. Like, close all the windows. Like, don't, you know, I don't know what's going on. Like, you know, so
Whoa. We
were all a bit freaked out about the faceless man.
Oh, the creepiest thing to me is, because it's happened to me before, where you're driving in the middle of nowhere, and then you see somebody walking.
Yeah.
At night. And you're just like, what? That is the creepiest thing, man. That's.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, yeah, that's definitely creepy. But and you well know this, Barry, because you lived out more in the country than I did.
Yeah.
If somebody knocked at your house at night and you did not know somebody was coming over.
Yeah.
That's scary.
Oh, yeah.
That is big time scary because, again, that's just not how you do things when, you know, you.
Yeah.
And, that's weird. For that's weird series of events.
It was a sliding glass door, so it was a completely see-through, but my mom had, like, the curtains on the whole thing, so, like, you had to pull them back. Well, none of us were going to pull back the curtain and see what was up there.
Wow.
For somebody to knock, so we didn't look through the door, but that was when my dad would go outside and be like, there's nothing out there, it's raining, the dogs are going crazy, but there's no sign of person. So that's where me and my sister came to the conclusion that it was most likely had to be a ghost, mainly because we didn't see, he had no features, he was just walking in the direction of our house. We saw him in the headlights. He had no...
Was he walking toward you? He was walking toward you?
So when we were driving, he was walking away.
Okay.
So we came up behind him and he was... And that's when I looked and I was like, that man, like, I don't see his face. Like, where's his head? And he had a tan trench coat, long trench coat, and had the collar flipped up. And was like looking down, and I didn't see any face. I was like, that's odd. And then because we were young, you know, went home and told dad, like, there's somebody walking down the street late at night. And it wasn't really late at night. It was just dark because I just got out of dance at probably like 8:30.
Yep.
And it was just dark. So it had to be winter time when like it doesn't get dark. It gets dark earlier.
Yeah.
And and
that's so creepy.
Found any trace of him, never saw him again. Never, like I said, the dogs went crazy, but the knock was the scariest.
That's crazy. And no one else that you'd ever heard anybody seeing that person or.
No, like I remember afterwards, like my mom asking like the closest neighbors that were super far. And I know where we had seen him was close to an elderly lady that lived on her own, who was one of our like long-term neighbors on that street. And she was like, no, I didn't hear anything or see anything that night. Like, you know, nothing out of the ordinary, but it was just the setting,
wild.
Not seeing the man.
That's creepy.
That's a perfect start for a very scary movie.
Yes.
Definitely.
And I see it plain as day as we're talking. Like, I see the man plain as day in my mind. It's, like, ingrained in there. Wow. And we never really talked about it. I need to actually, now that we're talking about it, I need to ask my sister.
You should.
Because
definitely.
That was over 25 years ago, I guess. That was a while ago.
Have you had any other ghostly weirdness happened to you after that at all, or is that the only thing?
That's the only thing that I remember. I very much believe in them, 1,000%. I believe that there are, you know, beings that have not crossed over, or beings that are, you know, stuck in what we can see in our realm, and, you know, aren't able to or move on, or they're coming back to talk to us or something. But I haven't had any other than the weird and walking
down the street. Growing up out in the country, you've got a rare view of the sky that we don't have if you're in town or even in the city, especially.
Yeah.
Did you ever see anything unusual in the sky? you ever see any like UFOs or anything that weird?
No, but I kind of wish. I've heard, I kind of like, I have always wanted to see something.
You're our kind of people. So
any kind of encounters that, I mean, I full 100% believe in that too, because I feel like what a waste of the entire universe if we're the only things that are alive. Like that would be such a waste of time and space. And I don't really think nature believes in waste. So it's like, there's got to be more to it than that.
For sure. For sure. Wow, that's crazy. That's crazy. And I remember my mom telling me a story when she was, this was, gosh, probably late 70s, early 80s, and my dad wasn't home. And at like 10 or 11 o'clock at night, someone, we lived out in the country, and the houses were spread apart by probably half an, probably half an acre, well, maybe not that much between the houses. Their houses were spread out. But some guy came through in a pickup and drove like right into our yard, really close to the windows, just tore through the yard and then went out and terrified my mom. She was like, and this is like a Saturday night, you know, and that kind of stuff back then. Of course, we didn't have Ring cameras. There was no. There's no way to pick up a cell phone call or phone and call my dad or any of that. You just had to wait. And that was scary. Though back then, that was a different time and you felt more separated than we do now, where it's like, you know, you could have posted on Facebook or something. Hey, saw this guy, you know?
That didn't exist. I think this was like, when I think my mom was the only one at that time who actually had a cell phone, and it was like the big brick. She was the only one who took it, and you know, it stayed charged for 6 weeks instead of an hour or two.
But it also cost $6 an hour, a minute to use it. So,
Right.
So, wow. Just call right then and there, and you know, and you can't just pull out your phone and take a picture of it, right? Like that didn't then either, because I would have, but. My picture's up here, and he get a sketch artist and
put that to a movie
for music drawing.
Yeah, definitely reach out to your sister and ask her about it. You know, we'd like a follow up and see if she remembers the same thing. You know,
I will do that. I will have her be like, "Hey, you need to come follow up on the podcast and let her know, let them know that we weren't crazy that night." I was young and she was just a teenager driving, and
I don't even know what song it was.
I know. I really want to know what
song it was. It's Without a Face by Billy Idol.
Right.
I don't. It was. So that was back when I was really into, you know, I was seven. So I was like into NSYNC and Backstreet Boys and Britney Spears and all the poppy people. Right. And I know it was a popular song at that time. I need to probably just dig a little deeper and listen to some old 90s. Pop, and it'll come back and it'll like
even creepier in my opinion when you have a pop song superimposed over a really creepy moment that can be a pretty wild scene, man. Well, that's awesome. Well, thank you for sharing that.
Get this. We call it What's Your Weird Story, right? But we don't limit it to weird stories. It's true. Sometimes we have crazy travel and epic adventure stories. Sometimes we do book reports and other special episodes. Sometimes we'll cover some weird news. Sometimes I'll see one of my oldest, dearest friends just dancing around and punching the air for 5 minutes before we sit down and record an episode. But hey, it's all good because it's fun to talk to people, to make new friends, to get in touch and reacquainted with old friends and hear amazing stories. You mentioned that also beside your regular job, you're a mediator, which is, I think that's a really cool, really interesting job. I think it's fairly unusual. What is, like, you mind telling us about that? You got any good stories that you can make up names or something, you know?
Yeah. So I am a certified mediator. And so my job is to save people time, save people money, and keep them out of the courts. So, I also, my big thing is empowering people to solve your own conflicts, right? You don't need a judge to tell you what to do. You don't need an attorney to tell you what to do, because at the end of the day, what that attorney is going to draft up or what that judge is going to order you to do may not fit for your life. Mm-hmm. So in mediation, we very much focus on the authorship of your agreements, because you're living that life, right? You're seeing what works for your family or your situation. Whereas a judge or an attorney is seeing from the outside in. They may tell you, okay, you can see your kids, you know, every weekend, but that may not work for your schedule. But if you come to mediation, you can get something worked out between the parties that works for your life. So, I tend to deal more on relationship mediation. So I don't really deal with like super high conflict. Some mediators specialize in that, but I like to, my focus now is, like premarital. So like before we ever walk down the aisle or get married, let's hash out some of the things like in a prenuptial and all the, you know, the legal parts of that. I'm not an attorney or anything like that, but, while you still love each other, while you still like each other, before we really get into the unhappy moments of marriage, get something in place before then. So that's kind of what I do. And it is very, very much like a little known profession, I think, but a much needed one. I think it is kind of gatekept in the community where people just don't know, right? They assume that, oh, well, I need a divorce. I got to go see it. I got to go hire an attorney and retain an attorney for, you know, $7,000, which is not necessarily the case. You can agree to what you want to agree to on your terms. And I'm just the party that sits in the middle and keeps that conversation going. So I ask the right questions to figure out, you know, yes, you're coming in with this hard ask, but why are you asking what you're asking for?
Yeah.
How can you get to the root of what the conflict is? And asking those, you know, purposeful questions to get the parties thinking. So yeah,
Do you have a legal binding like contract or something that comes out of that?
Yeah, you absolutely do. So you have an agreement. You can type up an MOU, so you can have that memorandum of understanding, or you can do the full-on agreement, which I prepare, and sometimes it's outsourced if it's something that is really technical or really needing the advice of an attorney. Then you know a paralegal will write up all of that. I just bring the facts and the case to them, and then they write up everything that's the legal contract for the parties.
Gotcha. I've used a mediator once.
Oh, good.
Yeah. And it worked out real well. I went to court and the judge said, we can either sit down with a mediator or they will. Because the court's heavy handed, just like you said. Mm-hmm. They just, okay, you guys can't solve your problem. I'll solve it for you.
Yeah.
And then bam, that's what it is. But yeah, it worked out real well, actually. So
that's good.
Cool.
Yeah. I've been on the good sides of mediation, and then I also, prior to what I do now and my university job, I was a school teacher and a special ed teacher, and so that area deals a lot with mediation between families and the schools that aren't getting along. So I've been in good mediations as an advocate for my families, and I've been in some that were atrocious mediations.
Because
they, it was just like, okay, we're gonna, you know, what's your side? And okay, what do you want? Like, that's not how we do this. So.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask if you've seen like an increase in like the prenup kind of, it seems like that's something that has become a bigger part of, I guess, popular culture, where people are more aware of what a prenup is.
Yeah, definitely. I would say I do serve a lot of clients who are in their like 20s to 30s age range. I feel like that demographic definitely, they see the value in investing in their relationship early on. So they're, you know, I know it seems like you wouldn't think that with, you know, breakups and social media and all of that, but there really is kind of an uptick of getting to an agreement before we ever get to the altar in that age group. I think a lot of that has to do with now, you know, couples are entering relationships and they have their own assets, right? They have their own houses, their own cars, their own things going on. And then now, oh, well, I'm going to get married and I'm going to combine this legally with you. So I need something to protect me. And that's, you know, men and women, both parties, yeah. You know, it's not just one, you know, side or the other. That's pretty common that, you know, we have a lot of couples who are independently wealthy. They have their own thing going mm-hmm. on. And now we're going to set ourselves up for a good marriage. And I get that question a lot, like, well, don't prenups. Doesn't that feel like you're setting up a marriage for failure? And I think completely no. I think it is setting you up for success because we're getting something in place that you both want right now while you still like each other. Like I said, worst case scenario, you're going to leave that marriage with something that you both wanted, right? You both want it. You both agreed to this. And, you know, things change. So we can always, you can amend that later on after you, you know, get to an agreement or whatever. But yeah, I do see an uptick in the younger people investing in their marriage.
Yeah, it is a business. I mean, that's what you're doing when you're getting married. You're deciding that we're going to forge on through this life. We're going to create something together. And I think that's a good thing. That is something that, especially nowadays when you have, you know, a lot of times when people get divorced, it's wild what comes out of those legally in the legal sense. And so, if you're both on the same page and that makes things easier, at least you have a divided, you know exactly how things are working and it's, you know, down the middle. Everybody knows the game, you know?
Sure. Cool. And it's not just assets. So like, I know that's a big thing that come, you know, out of prenups and stuff, but I also have worked with clients who, they're blending families, right? Like mom has her set of kids and dad has his set of kids or whatever the family dynamic may look like. And mom's been parenting one way for a while and dad's been parenting his way for a while. So how do we come to meet in the middle now that we're living under the same roof?
So
that's something that,
could be interesting. Yeah. You have to play the role sort of, and I hate to use this, but you have to be psychologically minded in a way to how do you present something to two people that we can move further down the road with it. Because if you're coming at it from a perspective of putting people back on their heels, that could be tough to deal with. So I'm sure you've had to develop this way of interacting with people that comes across as like inviting and, you know.
Yeah, I think the one toolbox in a mediator's toolkit is your ability to truly empathize. Mm-hmm. I'm not sympathetic to either party, but I can put on your shoes for just a little bit to see why are you asking for what you're asking for? And then, you know, before we ever even get to a mediation, we do a very thorough assessment ahead of time. Like safety is always number one, which is kind of, you know, shocking to some people when I talk about it. They're like, oh, well, why are you doing a safety assessment with people? And you're only on Zoom. Like we don't meet in person. We're all on a computer screen, but you have to always assess for those power dynamics. Like what's going on? Like is one, you know, does one party is more educated than the other, or one party controlled all the finances, or, you know, has there ever been any violent situation in the past? And if that's the case, then you're absolutely not a fit for mediation. If there's ever going to be a threat to your safety, either party's safety coming out of this or during it or anything like that. So we do a good job, or I try to do a good job of vetting all of that before we ever get to the mediation, so that when we get in there, you know, we usually have a pretty good conversation and I can decipher, you know, how can we move the ball a little further? Like and if you get to a stalemate, like you sometimes do, you get to where it's like, okay, let's take a break. let's caucus this for a little bit. Things are getting a little intense. Like let's pause. So, I mean, you know, mediations can take on a life of their own and, but yeah, it's fun because I feel like it's a service of helping people and empowering people to get to their resolve, because it's 100% confidential too. Like, nobody talks about what's in mediation. You don't have to tell anybody. The other part, like, you can swear yourself to secrecy and it goes nowhere. Like, there's no public court record where somebody's going to go type your name in and see what happened in your mediation. Mm-hmm. It doesn't happen. So, they're 100% confidential. They are, they're driven by you. They're your mediation. They're your outcomes. And I'm just the person to help you get there. So
that's cool.
That's really cool. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really fun. So
I think your background as a teacher, as you said, elementary school as well, as special needs. I mean, that definitely sets you up to have to way to reach people and understand them in, you know, in an empathic way, you know, to have the empathy and and work with them.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's what drove me to just become a mediator and start my own practice doing that, is because I always found myself in the center of those conflicts anyway, right? Mm-hmm. Like, as an advocate, like, my parents were wanting this, but the school was saying this. It's like, okay, I can see both sides. I was a teacher. I see the school side of you, but I'm also wanting to do what's right for this student that I know needs what they need. So how can we come to an agreement on that? So even in the classroom, as I was a science teacher and then a special ed teacher, understanding those conflicts between teenagers are like, I only taught high school. Like, oh, that's a whole other ballgame. But to understand why the conflict is happening with the student and the teacher, or the student and the admin, or the teachers and the admin. Like, mm-hmm. So we have something I'm partnering with another, he's a coach that we're kind of figuring out how can we bring mediation and conflict resolution to all of those populations in a school to kind of bridge those gaps that sometimes I think people don't know how to navigate. It's not there. I just think they don't know how to navigate those conversations. And so bringing what mediation does to those areas, I think will help solve some of those problems in schools.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. I think that's definitely something that schools could use. Cause I know that, our alma mater, our high school system, that the one that Barry and I graduated from, they could have probably used a mediator too here last year, because there was a
big lawsuit,
and it kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger because they didn't have. I don't know exactly why, I shouldn't say, but mediation probably would have helped out. That's really cool. It's something that definitely, there should just kind of, like, it's almost like, therapists, like, there should be more awareness of, and people should be not, there should be more access to these things, these interpersonal dynamics, because you need to have somebody who is, is the middle ground, who you need to have to, so that the power can, like you said, be empowering, because it keeps the power balance and, can shift it to where it is even, or what you're attempting to do, I guess, there. And that's, sure there's a lot of people who need that because they can't stand up for themselves.
Yeah. And I think the other thing that I love about mediation is that society in general is, we're very programmed to view conflict as a winner and a loser, right? Mm-hmm. Somebody has to win this battle and somebody has to come out on the losing end. But that's not true in mediation, right? Our goal is to get those win-win agreements in place so everybody leaves happy with something that they came to the table for. So I think kind of educating people on breaking that stigma in and of itself, that, conflict is inherent to the human experience. Like, it's going to happen. It happens in workplaces. It happens in schools. It happens in families, everywhere. But to be able to navigate that to where we can both come out of this with something that is win-win for us, and you don't have to be, you don't have to lose. And I think I see that a lot, just reflecting back on my career, that a lot of teenagers felt so misunderstood, like, you know, people were out to get them, or that, you know, this teacher didn't like them, or so, you know, whatever the conflict may have been. But that may have not been the reality of it. So I think sitting mm-hmm. down and explaining, you know, your position and why is this happening? And then the other person, party B, you know, giving their position, why is that happening? I think we lose that communication and when the person like myself can take the emotion out of it, that I'm mm-hmm. not emotional about either case, right? I don't have skin in either one of these games. This isn't my conflict, but
right.
I can see both sides of the coin and come to a resolution about something.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of, I've reflected a lot over my time in the classroom, and we need a mediator on staff in these schools too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To help everybody get through their conflicts.
Yeah. They have a lot of, any time in life, like, you look at things through your lens, and sometimes you can't step outside of that lens to see,
yeah.
you know, hey, this person's got a version of that that doesn't quite line up with your version of that. And they always say that a good negotiator, you leave in a situation where all parties are happy, and that's how you know you've reached a good resolution. So that's a good thing. That's a good thing. And I didn't really even realize that it was a profession. So thank you for bringing that to light.
Yeah, it is a profession. And to go back on what you just said, we get very caught up in our perception of reality, because I only see life through my lens, right? And you see your life through your lens. So that's my perception. But when you're able to step out of your perception into someone else's perspective, is where you see that transformation, where you see, okay, I'm willing to get out of my little bubble and how I see things to look and view it through someone else's perspective.
Yeah, like
powerful.
Yeah, like Barry said, you're caught up in your own head. You're caught up in your own. Your feelings will cloud your thinking, your judgment, yeah. and you can't. No matter how much you try to dissociate.
Yeah.
Pardon me, I tried to fight off a yawn. No matter how hard you try to dissociate your feelings from what you know, it's still very difficult to completely remove that aspect of it. And, you know, especially when it's interpersonal relationships, that's when feelings get hurt. And, you know, that's got to be. I bet it can be really messy, and that you're the cleaning lady. So.
Yeah, I'm the cleaning lady. I clean up these relationships, but sometimes it can get a little contentious. Like, clients will kind of spill the beans, so to speak, on some things that you really like. I didn't need to know that, but thank you for bringing it up. Type stuff. Again, that's where our assessment, a lot of mediation is done before you even get to the table. So those assessments and the questions that we ask in our part of our intake to, you know, see if mediation is even a good fit, a lot of those clear up a lot of the issues right ahead of time. And then when we get in there, we just, you know, we hash things out and figure out what's going to work and come to our agreement and resolution, and we start working on it and you start living it. And if it's not working next month, come back and see me. We'll come back to the table and talk about it.
That's so cool.
Then everybody goes for pizza.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
That's awesome. Yeah. Do you have a website or anything to announce to folks?
Yeah. So my website is, I was very intentional when setting it up. So I was like, well, I could name it after my practice, which is Clearview Mediation. But I'm like, no, nobody wants to type that in. So I was like, I want it to be exactly what I'm doing. So my website is helpmyconflict.com.
Brilliant.
So that's
awesome.
Yeah, that is my website. It has all my information, booking links. I talk to people all the time for, you know, my consults are free, and that's what I do. So
great. You ever thought about doing a podcast, starting a podcast?
I have never thought of starting a podcast.
It might be a lane that isn't very well tapped, because you know, I don't know a lot about it. I don't know how many people do, but you know, that's the cool thing about podcasts, is that there's always something out. If I'm interested in something, I can find something, you know, that's somebody talked about it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great idea. Maybe I'll put that in my goals for 2025.
There you go.
There you go. There you go.
Start a mediation podcast. Yeah. Help my conflict.
I bet being a mother also and having, you know, kids, I bet that definitely helps being, you know, in the mediation practice.
It does. It does. And it's, yes, because sometimes I have a 12-year-old and a 10-year-old, and some days they love each other, and some days it's like, we can't stand each other. So yes, yeah. Coming to the figuring out, you know, getting to the bottom of what he said, she did, whatever.
Yeah.
Let's sit down and talk about this. And I think learning those skills has helped in my relationship as well. So it, you know, it's
good.
It is good skills to have all around, just to learn how to navigate those tough situations. For sure.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, this has been great, Bonnie.
Yes, thank you for having me. I was, when I saw what your podcast was about, I was like, oh, I have a great story for that. I haven't told anybody in 25 years, so.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Definitely let us know what your sister says, because we would like to get that side of the story too, so. Or have her come on. We'd love to talk to her if she wants.
Yeah, I will see if she remembers that, and yeah, we can follow up and have her perspective on what happened.
That'd be really cool.
Yeah. Really cool. Hey, you know what we need?
What's that?
We need a new ad for our merch store.
Our merch store.
I've had a few people reach out to me and ask me, just how do we get What's Your Weird Story merch?
Huh. How do we get that What's Your Weird Story merch?
What's-your, spelled Y-E-R, dash, weird, dash, story, dot, myspreadshop.com.
That's what's-your, spelled Y-E-R, dash, weird, dash, story, dot, myspreadshop.com.
That's correct. Get in touch with us. Go buy some merch. We got some cool stuff.
Yeah, dude. And you know what? If any of our listeners out there has some really cool ideas or has some really cool What's Your Weird Story type art that they want to see on a t-shirt, get a hold of us. Maybe it'll happen.
Wow, the story about her being in the car and they're trying to make their way back home and they see a man walking and
with no face.
He's got no face.
No face, dude. That's just, I mean, it's kind of creepy enough seeing somebody walking at night when, you know, especially on the country, when you know that that's unusual.
Yeah.
But when there's, you know, I mean, just no face.
Yeah.
What the hell is that about?
Yeah. I don't know. You know? That's scary, though. Even as an adult, let alone a kid, man.
Yeah.
And then the knock, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, God. You know, you'd always hear those, like, sort of those tales about weird people coming around, you know, in the middle of the night and stuff like that. And as a kid, that used to just freak me out because you don't know. You don't know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, back before we had cell phones and stuff, that was, man, that was a scary proposition, you know? So,
yeah.
Crazy stuff, man. And then, you know, of course, her life as a mediator is really, it's interesting because we've never had anybody in that field. Mm-hmm. You know, we, of course, don't know a whole lot about that. I had used a mediator years ago during a court case. And I found it to be a really good way to go to resolve this issue. But it's like you don't really think about that. If you're facing an issue like that and you're always just like, okay, well, we got to go to court, you know. But I think that's a great way to resolve conflict.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And, you know, I don't know if I would be a good one, to be honest with you. I think that I would, you know, inadvertently kind of be like, you know, maybe taking somebody's side or something.
Right.
Like that.
Yeah.
You know, hard. Not meaning to, but being like, well, you know, you screwed up. You're the one that did this to them, you know, or whatever.
Right. But, yeah.
So
you got to be the kind of person that facilitates making deals with people. And
yeah.
How do you come together with two parties that are quarreling, or, you know, maybe not even quarreling, like we were talking about prenups and stuff like that.
Yep.
How do you, you know, get yourself into a situation and whatever the parameters are, you figure, I mean, that takes a lot of social ability of
yes.
having people come together and meeting in the middle somewhere where all parties are happy, or at least all parties are willing to do the thing that is being presented. And then you don't get the court systems involved, and it's such a messy thing when that yeah. happens. And
well, anytime you're going to have any kind of like affairs of the heart, and you know, the legalities around dealing with relationships, you know, and between people, you know, that it is like, you know, you have to treat it like a business, like you said,
yeah,
like she said, you've got to treat it like that, and you know, take it, approach it in that way so that you can make things be fair. And you can't, you've got to take, you know, hurt feelings out and all of that out.
Yeah. 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 It's cool. We had a little bit of a discussion before we started rolling, and she mentioned that she was a mediator, and this episode is a great representation of what it's like to come on, because, you know, she came on, she had a story, and then we started talking, and then we were like, hey, let's ask her about her job. What does she do? Yeah. And then that sparked a whole other conversation, and that was cool because we got to learn something that we didn't know about, and that was cool. And that's what we love when people come on the show, and we want you to come on the show. Even if you've got just a small short story about something, that could lead into other things. And even if it doesn't, just come on, share your yeah. story. We want to talk to you.
Yeah, it's fun. We try to have fun. We try to have some laughs, you know, and we try to make it as quick and painless as possible. It's really easy. It's really fun. And, you know, we're always looking to hear new stories. We're here, you know, talk to new people, but also have return visits from our friends that have already been guests. We're always open for that. And we appreciate you as Weirdsville as supporting the podcast and for spreading the word out. And yeah, you know, maybe you've got a friend or a cousin or somebody, you know, at work who's got a weird story, who's got something unusual going on. You know, hey, point them our way. You know, we'll set something up and we'll talk and we'll have a good time. And you will too.
Absolutely.
Get it. All right, Bear. Well, let's tell them we'll tell them where you can find us on our social media.
Not me.
All right. You can find us on Instagram. You can find us on Facebook. We're on X, but, you know, not really. And mainly just Instagram, Facebook. Those are the two big ones we really use. You can contact us through those. You can contact us through our website. You can email us directly at wywspod@gmail.com. And we look forward to hearing from you. So, you know, you can drop us a hi, drop us a hello, drop us your thoughts on an episode. We love feedback. We love having communications. If you've got any questions for any guest, you can shoot those our way. And, you know, if we have them back, or we can answer that, or we can have them answer it through email or something like that. Anyway, feel free to do that. And feel free to share the podcast with everybody that you know. And we will see you next time for some more weird spookiness. Oh, it's going to be a good one. But until then, be safe.
Be weird.
As always, if you have a weird story, we want to hear it.
If you have a lot of them, we want to hear them all.
We can't do this podcast without your invaluable contributions.
Whether it's sharing your stories,
listening,
rating,
and spreading the word about the podcast. Thanks for listening. Till next time, be safe.
Be weird.
The stories presented on the What's Your Weird Story podcast are, to our knowledge, true experiences that our guests have had. We can't take the time to research all claims made, and besides, it's just not as fun.